Ed White is correspondent for the Financial Times based in Seoul. Ed, hello. New reports from defectors out of North Korea. What are we learning about what's happening inside?
Yeah, for a bit of background here, reliable statistics on North Korea are very hard to come by because there is so little access in the country for outsiders, including for the United Nations. But analysts and journalists and other experts who focus on the country often say the best sources of reliable information can come from these testimonies of defectors, particularly people who have left North Korea recently and those who are still in touch with family in the country. And so a Seoul-based research-focused NGO has just this week reported the results of a study it's carried out into the state of healthcare in North Korea. Now, this group surveyed more than 500 defectors who have settled in Seoul just this year, mostly women, and about their research was about the experiences under the North Korean healthcare system. And they also conducted longer in-depth interviews with a group who had worked as doctors or nurses in North Korea. And the results were quite shocking and quite alarming. That includes finding that the maternal mortality rate in North Korea is perhaps around about 1,200 deaths per 100,000 births. Now, that would be some 15 times higher than what had previously been reported in UN data, and nearly five times above the global average. For comparison, that 1,200 figure per 100,000 births compares to about 11 in New Zealand. The neonatal mortality rate was found to be about 46 infant deaths per 1,000 births, and that's nearly five times above the UN level, or I think four deaths per 1,000 births in New Zealand. So the other thing that came out of this was some of the anecdotal evidence given in the interviews was particularly disturbing, and it all stands in very stark contrast to how North Korea has portrayed its own advances, but also in terms of very, very, very stark contrast in terms of what the UN data had previously shown. So this report basically has outlined that the country's healthcare system is essentially defunct. There are problems not just with a lack of medicine and equipment, but also the electricity or the power to run the facilities is lacking. While there has been an increase of cheap medicine or cheaper medicine, much of it from China, coming across the borders and being available in local markets inside North Korea, for many of the country's 25 million people, this isn't much help because they just can't afford it. And making matters even worse, some of the health professionals that were interviewed said that there was basically widespread corruption, whereby officials who were diverting equipment that had been delivered via humanitarian aid, and they were diverting that for their own profit. So grim findings, but I think important insights into the plight faced by ordinary North Koreans while so much of the world is just focused on the relationship between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi has been in The Hague this week. Things have certainly turned, haven't they, from her heroic past, now facing charges of genocide in her country.
That's right. This case relates to the crackdown in Myanmar's northwestern Rakhine state back in late 2016, which saw some 700,000 people, mostly Rohingya Muslims, flee the country for Bangladesh, where most of them remain today stuck in refugee camps. This crackdown, which took place in a basically closed-off part of the country, sparked an international outcry, particularly as photos and stories started to emerge showing extreme violence, including mass killings and villages being burnt to the ground. However, just 3 years on from that, Aung San Suu Kyi, the 74-year-old Nobel Peace Prize winner, is defending allegations of genocide in the International Court of Justice in The Hague. This case was brought by Gambia, a tiny but mostly Muslim African country. It has support from Canada and the Netherlands. And in this hearing, which we had the opening days of this week, Aung San Suu Kyi has been basically trying to argue that the crackdown by the Myanmar military was necessary and was a proportional or appropriate response after violence that was first caused by extremist Muslim groups in the region. She struck a quite defiant tone. She said that these countries bringing these allegations of genocide against Myanmar had, in her words, an incomplete and misleading picture of the crackdown. She also seemed to criticise other governments and international organisations for what she said was fueling polarisation in her country and actually aggravating the situation there. The ICJ, or the International Court of Justice, has only ever heard a few of these genocide cases, and these proceedings are likely to last for several years, and so we'll have to see where it all goes. But I think it's important to note just how out of step Aung San Suu Kyi's comments are with the basically international understanding on this issue. There are still, as I said, nearly 1 million people in very trying conditions in these refugee camps in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh. Many of them still say it's unsafe for them to return to Myanmar. And news publications and agencies, most notably Reuters, have widely published photographic evidence of mass killings of the Rohingya Muslim. And, you know, you had reporters there jailed for nearly 2 years after showing, you know, basically for showing how hard, showing one of these killings. And that just all shows how hard Myanmar authorities have tried to keep everything unreported.
We don't have time to do it justice, but we certainly had the leaks of the Communist Party documents revealing the extent of China's treatment of Muslims in the Xinjiang. And what is the latest? Is more international pressure looming?
Yeah, I mean, so we had these major leaks, which were very significant for one reason, just because you don't really get leaks out of the Chinese government very often. But they essentially showed that both the Chinese leadership had been in Beijing, had been well aware of the situation in Xinjiang, and also that there was basically a widespread use of technologies like big data, artificial intelligence, and facial recognition all being used to help identify and target people in Xinjiang that authorities thought might be suspicious. China has basically labeled these leaks as pure fabrication and fake news, but despite all of that, the US is making moves to crack down on the Chinese authorities in Xinjiang. There's law that was passed, I think, last week that is going to basically potentially lead to sanctions on Chinese officials. And at the same time, we've seen, because of these leaks and more details that are now emerging, we are just going to see more and more international pressure from the international community.
Thank you, Ed.